I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Serie A fan. The season's over and it's party time as we crack out the beers and reflect on the final day action. Not to mention the off-pitch action is just getting started, as 8 out of the top 10 clubs sack the gaffer. We'll give you our take on all of that and theorise about the national squad composition. All of this before the main event, Scudetto Awards and Honourable League Table. This episode of Scudetto. Hello and welcome to the season finale of Scudetto, your weekly roundup of top flight Italian football. And as usual, we've got plenty to talk about. The football's over, but the managerial carousel has gone into overdrive. We'll be getting into all of that. Try and give you a bit of a season overview. We've got the Scudetto Awards. We'll be answering your questions. But first of all, just a couple of early honourable mentions that I wanted to give out. Boaz, you get an honourable for your 100% record on the pod. Very impressive. Both Kenny and I, at various points in the season, have had to have a week off for one reason or another. You got almost bombed and we're still on the podcast, so congratulations.
At several points when Milan were having bad results, I considered pulling a sickie, but I took one for the team, as they say.
Yeah, and Kenny, you get an honourable for getting us on board to start with this podcast and for producing it every week. So yeah, thanks to both of you. It's been a pleasure to do the podcast this season.
Thank you, Oscar.
It's sounding like Conte. It's unclear if you'll be here next year.
Are you about to do one?
I'm not about to do one live on air. So yeah, just not to mention, it's been obviously a great excuse to drink beers every Thursday. And on that note, Kenny, what is the beer lineup for the evening?
Yeah, Oscar. So I've got three beers lined up. I've started off with, I think it's a bit ambitious to get through three in an episode without sort of opening one up in our pre-prod. So I've already opened up the first one, which is a Tiny Rebel Club Tropica, and it's an IPA, a tropical IPA. It's very, very tasty, although it does taste a little bit like just tropical fruit juice. But I'm done with that, to be honest. I quite like tropical fruit juice. I've also got, for later on, I've got a Six North Framboise Raspberry beer, and I've got this Fierce Rhubarb, which is a fruit pale ale, obviously rhubarb themed. You guys will remember there was a slight mishap with the rhubarb beer earlier on, so I'm giving this theme another try. Have you got? What have you got, Oscar?
It looks like a good one. I like the bear graphic on the Fierce Rhubarb.
Yeah, it's got a bear with sunshades on. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've gone with a couple of my favourite beers from the season. One of them is the Tanker Sauna Session beer, an Estonian birch ale, which I've talked about on at least a couple of occasions. And I've also got a Cool Heads Naked Sauna Sour. As you remarked, I've been getting into the sour beers since I've been over here, and who doesn't love a naked sauna? So just combining two of my favourite things.
Nice work.
Yeah. How about you, Buzz?
I've got a pretty good beer lineup. They're in a ice bag underneath my desk right now, so I'm not going to pull them out to make some noise, but I've got a classic Brewdog Punk IPA. I've got a Goose Island IPA. And I just showed you it. What's it called? It's a Beaver Town.
Lupuloid or something?
That's the one, yeah. That one is my last one. It's the dessert because it's like 7.2%.
Yeah, that's nice. it's like a gamma ray, only stronger. So I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Beaver Town beers are all winners for me.
I'm just glad to have found them in Israel. This will be the first time I drink a Beaver Town on these shores.
Yeah, very good. Right, so let's talk about the final day of the season first, shall we? Yeah, before we do that, I actually promised an official apology to Juventus and Pirlo for predicting that they'd miss out on the Champions League. So sorry, Andrea, if you're listening, for underestimating you and your club.
I'm sure Pirlo will take a lot of consolation from that.
Well, he probably needs
after
it.
Having got the sack.
We will talk about that as well.
Apparently, Agnelli was a listener of the podcast, and that's what swung his job in the end. Oscar's pessimism about Pirlo's Juve.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's how Boaz got the contract to be the official podcaster of the Super League, actually, through the Agnelli connection. But yeah, on predictions that we did get right, Kenny and I both correctly predicted that Milan would be Atalanta and qualify. Boaz, how happy were you to be wrong about that?
First of all, I've mentioned this on the Milan Obsession pod where I was a guest earlier this week, but I did my damn hardest not to watch this game. I left my phones and my computer in a different room. I locked myself in the office. I was trying to turn it all off. But I forgot that I get notifications on my Apple Watch, and I have about 5 or 6 sports app that remind me of the Milan scores. So it was constant yellow card this and that. And to add insult to injury, I also signed up to a bunch of Major League Baseball and NBA notifications when I was living in the States. And it's never really bothered me. I never cared about it. But suddenly there was like all these scores that honestly I don't care about. So at the end of the day, I watched the second half more or less, and I was ecstatic after this result. I couldn't believe that we finally beat Atalanta in a game that was crucial to us.
Yeah, and I'm sure you'd be very happy to. How long has it been since you were last in the Champions League?
I think it's been 7 years, so a real long amount, particularly for a club like Milan, who like to think they are Europe's elite.
Yeah, and Kenny, obviously disappointment for you there with the loss on the final day, but a season to be happy with for Atalanta, really. What did you make of that result and kind of the rest of the action on the final day?
Yeah, well, like you said, I mean, it wasn't really disappointment for me. I mean, I said on last week's podcast, the Atalanta, yes, we're going for yet another record to finish second. But look, a club like Atalanta, just to be in the Champions League, to qualify for the Champions League 3 years consecutively, I'd have told you were having me on if you told me that when I was a kid. And Atalanta were yo-yoing between Serie B and Serie A. A club of their size to do that is an incredible achievement. And I think all of the players kind of realize that, and Gasperini realizes that, and the fans realize that, and the mood very much afterwards when they had their dishonorable mention celebration with the fans outside the ground, the end of season one, it was very much a positive one. So no disappointment for me at all. I think it would have been a bigger travesty if Milan, after what they'd done throughout 2020, had not qualified for the Champions League. So for me, I'm happy to see Milan make it. I thought it was a very, very tense game. It had like a real kind of final vibe to it. Milan, has to be said, were absolutely excellent defensively. Atalanta had a lot of the possession and everything without really troubling Milan too much. Yeah, I mean, couple of penalties, won it in the end. But for me, we have to mention Francesi, who was absolutely incredible, just majestic yet again. And what a way to cap off his season, and what season he's had, and what a development he's had under Pioli, because he looked great at Atalanta, then went to Milan and never really properly found his feet. And I think we're kind of seeing him emerging into one of the best midfielders in Europe, certainly in Serie A, but possibly in Europe. So I think it's all in all a very satisfactory result. Not even that bittersweet for Atalanta. It would have been nice to finish second, but third will do just nicely. And glad to see Milan make the Champions League, because I think they definitely deserve it.
And there is certain poetry about Milan ending the season with the most ever penalties in a Serie A season and getting 2 penalties on the very last match.
Oh, yeah. Are you still keeping your spreadsheet, Baz, of all the penalties and whether or not they were the correct decision?
I have a very accurate spreadsheet, and in my opinion, of the 21 penalties awarded, 19 were legit and 2 were bullshit.
Good to know.
We're going out on an explicit warning on Spotify just for the final one as part of this end of season extravaganza.
Going crazy here.
It's like the Christmas special. So all bets are off for this episode. So Milan and Atalanta, the only clubs in the top half to actually keep their managers. Shall we start with Juve and Pirlo? Obviously qualified with that 4-1 victory over Bologna. It's now been announced that Allegri will be taking over as manager of Juventus next season. Pirlo's released this long, sort of complicated statement about his time in charge of the club. Appears to be saying that he wants to continue his managerial career. Kenny, what did you make of the statement, and like, how do we evaluate the season at Juve now?
Well, I think there are two ways to evaluate this. One is for a manager in the first season of his managerial career at any level. And at that level, Andrea Pirlo has won Coppa Italia and qualified for the Champions League. And you have to say that, you have to say kudos for a manager who has come into this without any experience whatsoever, even at junior level. So I think given his lack of experience, a perfectly decent job done by Pirlo. The other way to evaluate it is as manager of Juventus, who have the most expensively assembled squad, the highest wage bill, 9 seasons of winning Serie A, and to scrape into the Champions League on the last day in the way that they did, courtesy of Napoli stumbling. You have to say it's not been a great year for Juve. So, I mean, Coppa Italia result kind of papers over the cracks. They've got Champions League football, so long as UEFA don't decide to take it away from them after this investigation that's going on. So they've kind of got away with it, despite the fact that they haven't got their 10th title in a row. But not a great season for Juve. But for Pirlo, I think he leaves with his head held high. You know, he came into a very, very high profile job. And I mean, in Italy, there can't be a more difficult job high-profile job to go into as your first managerial job than that. And he handled himself okay in the end. He got a couple of pieces of silverware. And yeah, I don't think his reputation will be tarnished at all, given his lack of experience. But for Juve, bad season.
Yeah, and on that analysis, I guess his statement makes quite a lot of sense. But Boaz, you and your brother have both been telling me this week that reheated soup never tastes as good. So does this analysis also apply to Allegri going back to Juventus, or is this a special kind of soup?
I think I mentioned on a few episodes back that reheated soup in Turin sometimes does taste good. They notoriously did it with Lippi and with Trapattoni in the past. Obviously, when you upgrade from Pirlo to Allegri, it might be that you're just upgrading the quality of your soup. And perhaps this is a way of Juventus kind of going back on the so-called mistakes of the past 2 years and giving Allegri what he always wanted, which is a big war chest to go out and rebuild this team. The big question is, do they continue to build around Cristiano, or do they focus entirely on the youngsters who have been brought in the past couple of years and have actually done pretty well and probably can't be blamed for the debacle that was this season?
Yeah, well, it has to be mentioned as well that it's been reported various times in the past that one of the reasons that Allegri left was a reluctance to sell Cristiano Ronaldo, who he claimed was kind of holding back the development of the team as a whole. And of course, that Ronaldo has had all of his fancy supercars moved. So I am fully expecting Ronaldo to be gone in the not too distant future. I mean, it could even happen before the Euros, if you ask me.
We may come on to it a little bit later, but something quite curious was that as part of Conte's release clause from Inter, there was a clause that he would not be allowed to go to manage Juventus. So obviously Inter were worried that he was in talks with their big rival.
Yeah, and Buzz, we should talk about Inter, because obviously you predicted that Conte was going to leave way back in January. Or was it Kenny that predicted it and you just agreed?
Having listened to many of our episodes in the past week or so, I know for a fact that I've mentioned it at some point, but I've said a lot of stuff that was complete and utter rubbish as well. So I don't want to give myself too much credit, but I did say that Conte has prior in winning the league and fucking off, let's say. Yeah, he did it at Chelsea, he did it at Juventus. And to be honest, I think it kind of made sense for his PR to leave now, because who's got the energy to start a rebuild project, particularly after such a taxing season? It always felt like relations between Conte and management weren't so good. As I said, I've been listening to a lot of our past episodes, and the amount of times we've mentioned him complaining about something, or, you know, him having a moan about the club. So if it wasn't Antonio Conte, he would have been fired a long, long time ago. And I think if it wasn't Antonio Conte, he probably would have stayed right now.
Yeah, but possibly would not have won the league. So perhaps the counterpoint to that. But it looks like, is it official that they've appointed Inzaghi? It's official that Inzaghi's left Lazio, right?
Yeah, Inzaghi leaving Lazio is official. But as we started recording, unless something's come through in the last sort of 15, 20 minutes or so, I don't think anything has been announced. But it's one of the worst kept secrets in Italian football at this point that Inzaghi will be the next Inter manager.
Oh, and what do we make of Inzaghi at Inter, Kenny? Do you think his brand of football is going to fit that squad that they've got there?
Yeah, well, the first thing to point out is that he also plays a similar type of formation to Conte. Obviously, a very different style. The sort of interpretation of that formation is very different. They do play counter-attacking in the same way that Inter do, but it's more, I don't know, that perhaps a little bit more fluid and more aesthetically pleasing in their counter-attacks than Inter, but perhaps less effective. I'm not convinced that Simone Inzaghi Inter can go on and consolidate this victory by winning Serie A again next season, although he is undoubtedly a very, very good manager. But I think from Inzaghi's point of view, you can't blame him. It sounds like, to all intents and purposes, he's been absolutely messed about by Lotito. He released a statement, I think, last week saying, look, I've been trying to get a new contract signed for 6 months, and if it was any club other than Lazio, who I have such a long history with, then I wouldn't be going in for talks this week. So it sounds like, I think Boaz mentioned as well, other stories about certain things being promised would be in the contract, and then when the contract materialized, the wages were lower, or the actual deal was different. It sounds like Lotito just being Lotito, and Inzaghi's just kind of thinking that he has a bit too much self-respect to just go along with it. I think Inter will be good under Inzaghi. I think they've got the players to fit his mold. But yeah, I'm just not convinced. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. I'm not convinced that they will win those difficult to win, hard to win games that they won under Conte. That run of victories that they won by one goal, that's a very Conte trait, and that's ultimately what won them Serie A, and I'm not sure that they do that under Inzaghi.
Yeah, and we'll maybe just skip over this because we're running out of time, but we should just give a dishonourable to Lazio for their parting statement about Inzaghi. Go and look it up. Fairly ridiculous.
Very cold.
Very, very cold. It wouldn't even refer to him by name.
I'm gonna start calling you guys my co-hosts and just ignoring your names.
A co-host and Serie A observer is having a beer of some sort tonight.
yeah. Okay. Just. I mean, there have obviously been plenty of other managerial changes that we're not going to have time to talk about this week.
Maybe we should just mention Juric's move from Verona to Torino, which to some might seem a step down. Firstly, credit has to go to David Di Nicola for saving Torino. It was it seemed like a doomed mission when he joined, and he did a very good job, although they did ship about 20 goals in the last three games or so. But still, Juric is one of the better rated managers in Serie A at the moment, and his football is quite entertaining. And for him to move to Torino rather than one of the traditional big clubs, for example, he was rumored to be one of Napoli's targets, seems a bit odd to me, but maybe Torino can finally get their act together.
Okay, thanks for that. And yeah, just before the break, let's just talk about the provisional Italian squad selection, because Mancini has done similar to what a few other managers have done, Gareth Southgate included, where he's named a larger provisional squad and will then confirm the, what is it, 26 players next Tuesday. So what do we make of his selection? And are there any sort of key people from the provisional squad that we think might miss out? Kenny, I know you've been making detailed notes on this one.
I have been, yes. Let me just refer to my notes. So I think it's quite obvious what Mancini's doing. I mean, he plays a 4-3-3, right? I think it's fairly likely that there will be nine defenders, seven midfielders, and seven forwards, along with your standard three goalkeepers. So it looks like he's filled out kind of, he's got an additional left back, an additional right back, an additional goalkeeper, an additional center back, couple of additional forwards, and a couple of additional midfielders. I think the first thing to say is that in that provisional squad, because of their involvement in the Champions League final, there is no Jorginho and there is no Emerson Palmieri, who I think will both be in that final squad. So there are certain people that I think are kind of on the cusp. There's like a few difficult positions in goal. He's got Meret and Cranio. I think it's very obvious that Sirigu is his second choice behind Donnarumma. So one of those two will miss out. I have a feeling it will probably be Cranio, although both of them have featured a fair amount. I think if you look at the left backs that are in that squad, Spinazzola and Palmieri, I think, quite easily edge out. Biraghi, I'd expect Biraghi to miss out. One of the interesting ones, though, for me is centre-back, because I think Toloi, who famously changed his nationality to Italian earlier this year, might end up being the player who misses out simply because Acerbi has had such a long sort of track record of playing in this Mancini team. I don't necessarily think that would be fair, but I have a suspicion that will potentially happen. And just looking down the list as well, right back, it's difficult to look past Florenzi and Di Lorenzo, really. Di Lorenzo has been much more involved than Lazzari in the Azzurri setup. He's also had a better end of the season. I think another real tricky area is going to be in the midfield. There's, you know, Pessina recently came into the squad, but he's just been so good for Atalanta, who, you know, again, had an outstanding season. You would expect Sensi and Castrovilli, two of the biggest talents in Italian football, to be there. I just don't think Sensi's played enough football this season to make it. And Castrovilli, as wonderful as I think he is a footballer, I'm not convinced that he's going to make it. Bernardeschi's had another disappointing season. I reckon he'll miss out. And Raspadori, I have an inclination that he's in there because he's young. It's to kind of give him experience of being around the squad. So a very long-winded answer to your question. And I am referring to my notes all through this. My bets would be Cranio out, Biraghi out, Toloi, unfortunately, out, even though I'd like to see him in. Lazzari out, Sensi and Castrovilli out, Bernardeschi out, and Raspadori out. And other than that, you have your 26-man squad.
Kenny, I respect the theory that you've put together here, but I noticed that he's missing one key ingredient. It's a certain Kevin Lasagna. I think we all agree would be a fantastic addition from the bench.
I have a very quick theory about this as well. I think Immobile and Belotti are obviously going to be in the squad. I think Kean will probably be kind of used as a backup striker also. He's very versatile, can play on either wing as well. He's played on the left wing for Italy in recent games. And Kevin Lasagna's, he's moved this season, but despite having a fantastic name, I just don't think he's done it on the pitch, Oscar. Well, he's had a call-up as well. He's had a call-up. So.
Yeah, he had. It's disappointing, but I suppose I'll cover the Euros regardless of his involvement.
I guess we'll have to get him on as our media correspondent.
Well, didn't want to say anything.
To offer insight.
Probably still can't because there's absolutely no basis to those claims. Baz, do you have any additional comment on Kenny's theories about the Italian squad?
The only thing I wanted to add was that this Italy squad is evidently missing any AC Milan players, which is a first in several decades, if I'm not mistaken. And that is if you don't consider Gigi Donnarumma a Milan player. That brings us on nicely to the fact that Milan did sign Mike Maignan, who I had mentioned a few weeks ago was a potential rumor. And he's obviously, he kept the most clean sheets in France this year, and he was Lille's keeper, and they went on to win a big championship. It's sad news to see AC Milan youth product leave, particularly when it's on a free and they're not making any money off of it. But at the same time, I kind of respect Paolo Maldini even more than I did before to be the one of the first clubs, to my knowledge, to basically tell Mino Raiola to do one, to not let him blackmail the club. And it was getting ridiculous. He was getting like contracts for Donnarumma's brother. His aunt was doing the dishes. His great grandfather was like in charge of like mailing out things. It's just like, you know, and ultimately what broke the camel's back was that Milan offered Donnarumma a contract a few months ago, and he basically didn't even respond to that. And it's a sad end to a wonderful story. We mentioned earlier in the season that he was the fastest player to reach 200 Serie A appearances. And also he has 250 appearances for Milan, which at such a young age was phenomenal. But football is a business, and we move on.
Kenny, quick point before we go to the break.
Yeah, I think one of the points made about Mino Raiola regularly, and I think actually, Boaz, you raised this perhaps slightly as a devil's advocate kind of thing, saying he's just doing his job, getting the best salary for the most money for his clients as possible. And that's undoubtedly part of an agent's job, but also surely part of an agent's job is making sure that their clients have the best careers possible. And one of the things that's quite glaring when you look through Mino Raiola's list of clients is undoubtedly some of the most talented names in football who haven't quite fulfilled their potential. We can even put Zlatan Ibrahimovic into this, because Zlatan should have two or three Champions League trophies to his name, and fair enough, he's got national titles at Inter, at Juve, even at Barca, I believe. But you look at Balotelli, you look at Paul Pogba, arguably his biggest, finest hour World Cup champion, nothing to do with your agent because it's your national team. There are just like Robinho as well, just all of these hugely exciting players who moved for enormous sums and didn't fulfill their potential. So while I would suggest that he does get the best financial settlement for his players, ultimately a lot of his players don't move to the right clubs for them to develop into the absolute superstars that they have the potential to become.
While I don't want to disagree with what you said about where his players move, because for example, when Robinho moved to City, it was kind of a bizarre move at the time. And some of Zlatan's later movements were also kind of weird. But a lot is made of the fact that he's constantly moving his players, which I don't think is necessarily true. I mean, the aforementioned Zlatan stayed in Paris for 5 or 6 years. He's now in Milan for a second year when he's well past, almost 40. And also Pogba, at the end of the day, he's played for two clubs in his whole career. He's had fairly long spells at both of them, and perhaps it's just that he's not such a good player. And perhaps Mino Raiola's true skills is that he's managed to convince the world that the likes of Robinho and Pogba are world beaters, when actually it's just really good marketing. Let me just end by saying that perhaps the true sign of whether Raiola is an amazing moneymaker for himself or a great agent will be Haaland. And of course, this is less Serie A related for now, because hopefully someday he'll play for a Serie A club. But it'll be interesting to see how this guy's career develops and which moves or how many moves Raiola engineers.
Yeah. I mean, fair point. But I mean, to me, when you look at the players that he's had and those names that I've mentioned, I think between them, there are like two Europa League trophies or something like that. And obviously some of them have done well.
Great competition, can they?
Yeah, well, some of them have done well at their at national level, but that has less to do, obviously, with the agent. For me, I mean, an agent... forgive me for veering into Jerry Maguire territory here, but an agent also has to kind of think about, you know, the off the field, like managing the ego, the show me the money, get that.
Show me the money.
Well, that's only one part of it, right? And it just kind of seems like a lot of these players end up being that they're young guys. They've got a huge amount of talent. They've got these huge egos build up. They go into clubs and quite often they end up becoming disruptive in some way or another. Zlatan very intelligently has managed to kind of nurture that until it becomes like a positive character trait. But quite a lot of them, you know, find themselves alienated. To me, a good agent will also say, look, this is a team sport. You've got to play your role. You've got to kind of fit into the bigger project. And I think maybe he's great at negotiating big salaries, but picking the right clubs, nurturing those what are essentially guys in their early 20s, I'm just not sure that he's that great at that. So, I hope that Donnarumma doesn't turn into another one of those cases. And if he does end up at Juve, which it seems very almost certain he will do, then he's at a great club. And presumably with Buffon moving on, Chesney's a very decent keeper, but Donnarumma you would expect to be Juve's number one for the next 10 years if that's where he does end up.
Apparently Barcelona are also heavily interested in him, particularly with Ter Stegen's contract up for renewal.
Yeah. I saw that too, and obviously they're not a bad club to end up at either.
And I've said on this podcast in the past, if I were Donnarumma, I would have left Milan a long time ago, because he takes so much slack from fans, and it looks like he can't, because he's a fan, the pressure is too much for him. So all the best if he does go to any other club, but obviously I hope he loses if he goes to Juve.
Yeah. All right. Well, like a good agent, it's time for me to remind you that podcasting is a team sport, and that's the end of the half. So we'll be back shortly.
Hello, Serie A fan. Make Scudetto a part of your weekly football fix. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite listening platform, and follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Scudetto Pod. We'd love to have you on the squad.
Hello and welcome back to part two of Scudetto. And it's time for the inaugural Scudetto Awards. And first up is the Gagliardini Challenge.
This is a big one.
Woof.
And for any of our newer listeners that are not aware of the origins of the Gagliardini Challenge, Gagliardini had the worst game of his career in June 2020. A performance that was criticised for many aspects, most outstanding of which was missing an open goal that was impossible to miss. Ever since, we have been looking for the goal which trumps this monumentally bad miss. Have we found it? We have three nominations. Harry Maguire versus Milan in the Europa League.
Solid contender.
Big head.
Diego Farias versus Spezia a couple of weeks ago. Or Alvaro Morata just before Christmas versus Atalanta. Kenny, your vote goes to...
My vote can only ever go to Alvaro Morata. It's the audacity which gets it for me. It's the decision to pass up an open goal, to play in a teammate, to then receive the reverse pass, and again confronted with an open goal to decide to backheel it in the way he does. Alvaro Morata, I would rename the Gagliardini Challenge, the Murata Challenge, in your honor. You have truly done the award justice, and you've earned it. Congratulations. You might not have won Serie A, but for me, the Gagliardini Challenge can only ever go to you.
Boaz's opinion?
I was going to go for Maguire simply to give this award international je ne sais quoi, but Kenny's heartwarming speech just there won me over. And to be honest, I looked back and that Morato miss was particularly ridiculous. And it's a shame Kenny chose the trumpet music to open this segment, because the best music for that this particular award would be...
In that case, my deciding vote is not needed.
As the host, your vote counts double.
Ooh, does it now? Who would you have voted for? Even if it doesn't count double, who would you have voted for, Oscar?
Yeah, it's Murata for me.
It's Murata.
He was the clear leader at the Christmas podcast.
Can we rename this challenge the Murata Challenge for next season?
Maguire came close, but ultimately, just the extra effort that he went to with the back heel... Just crowns it for me. And yes, the Gagliardini Challenge is no more. The Murata Challenge is born.
This all sounds very Game of Thrones, but I'm into it. Let's keep going with it.
Okay, the next award, Living the Vidal Loca. Now, this award was coined when Vidal missed a goal against Roma, which was not an open goal and therefore did not actually meet the requirements to be an entry in the Gagliardini Challenge. Therefore, Living the Vidal Loca was born, and Vidal lived the Vidal Loca in that game.
This has a very end of season vibe to it, this section at the moment.
Other nominations in this category: Ronaldo versus Napoli, and Chiesa in the Coppa final just before he scored. He also had a glaring miss. I think it actually came off the post. Kenny, who lived the Vidal Loca the best?
No one lives La Vida Loca like Arturo Vidal. So for me, next season, it remains the Vidal Loca challenge.
This is a particular award that we can't rename because the whole pun is based on this guy's name. So
this might be the only time we ever...
Living La Cristiano Loca doesn't work quite as well.
Yeah. So for the first and possibly only time this award will be given out, Arturo Vidal has been living the Vidal Loca. We're on to, I was going to say a more serious award, but I've just looked at what the next award is. It's for the worst dressed.
There are some strong contenders in this category.
There are some strong contenders. Okay, so the first up is La Lazio kit. This is the lime, green and blue away kit with the socks, which are 50% blue and 50% lime. Absolute crime against fashion. The second is the Inter Milan. I think it's the third kit.
The fourth kit.
It's the fourth kit.
But they did wear it for a match.
It was described by Kenny as if Kandinsky had diarrhea or something like that. What was it?
I was a little bit more discreet than that. I said food poisoning.
Yeah, okay, so if Kandinsky had food poisoning.
Yeah.
And finally is the Texan tuxedo worn to away games by the Atalanta squad, which we discussed recently. Just a full denim suit. Yeah, not really sure who's most deserving of this award. They're all very, very strong contenders. Baz, I'll let you vote first on this one.
Well, first of all, I mean... I should say that I'm a little bit offended that Stefano Pioli's yacht wear is not on the list. He took to wearing like this weird white combo and these really weird brown shoes for a while. And it honestly looked like he was docking his boat somewhere. And not surprisingly, as soon as he stopped wearing these weird clothes... Milan went on an incredible run and qualified for the Champions League. And I hope he learns better for next year. But my award will definitely go to the double denim this time.
Ooh, I wasn't expecting you to go with that one. I think it could possibly win now. Kenny, what are you going to go for?
Every bone in my body says you don't do double denim. And if you're doing double denim, you at least do different colours double denim. Every bone in my body says to me, it's screaming... The whole replay jeans Atalanta set up here. But, I mean, that Inter, fourth kit. It's just like an optical delusion, to borrow a phrase from a Hollywood movie. For me, that is the biggest disgrace that we have seen on the football pitch this season. I think it has to be, much as blue denim on blue denim, especially when they're close but not quite this. Yeah, it has to be the Inter. Has to be the Inter fourth kit.
Oh, so my double, my vote counting for double is actually going to come into action here. Because,
I mean,
counting
for a single would come in for you have the tiebreaker, regardless of the rules.
Well, actually, I'm going to go for the Lazio kit, which, as you know, I have a big problem with.
Oh, my word.
Haven't given it two dishonorables this season.
I would suggest we should rock, paper, scissors for this, but I feel like maybe a podcast is the wrong medium to do rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, well, I mean, Boaz has given me the power of my
okay,
vote
you
double,
have the power.
So I'm going to invoke it, and it goes to the Lazio third kit.
And just to say that since they did get those two dishonorable mentions, it's more than the others got, so perhaps that's a good tiebreaker.
Good. Right, and Boaz, you were sad about Pioli's boat shoes missing out, but they're going to make it into this next category, which is the best managerial accessory. So first up, we've got Pioli's boat shoes, which have come as a late entry, replacing one of the other more controversial items that was on the list. Next up, we've got Fonseca's flat cap of Europa League fame. I think he thought he was in the Peaky Blinders, maybe. And finally, we've got Mihailovic's trainers, which made headlines. I think a pair of vintage Jordans, or there was some significance to them, but he wore Nikes with a suit, which impressed some people and not others. Your votes, please. Kenny, your turn to start.
I struggle to look past the flat cap, but I sense Boaz's frustration here, so almost in solidarity at missing out on the fashion faux pas award, I want to go for Pioli, so I'm going to go for Pioli.
I think Boaz didn't like it, the boat shoes, very much, so maybe he's going to go for something else.
I think I'm going to surprise you, and I'm going with Siniša Mihajlović, because his shoes are pretty expensive, pretty rare, and honestly, a man his age should never be wearing them. So kudos for having the balls.
Why do you do this to me? Because I would have gone probably with Fonseca.
Yeah, I mean, I'm tempted to go with Fonseca and just use my veto again, but actually, I think I'm going to go for Mihailovic's shoes.
The Scudetto Awards have become Oscars Scudetto Awards.
The Oscars. Could we call them the Oscars? Do you think we'd get sued if we called them the Oscars?
The Scudetto lawyers have asked me to cut that part out, Kenny.
No, I'm going to go with Mihailovic's trainers. He's worn some good hats as well, and I didn't want to put that on the list as well, but I think it does contribute towards him winning this award. So well done to him. There's a pair of trainers from the Scudetto boys on the way to him in the post. Next category is the biggest PR fail. There have been a lot of PR fails since we started this podcast in Serie A. Boaz, your social media dishonourable has highlighted many of them throughout the season. It's been a fixture in our dishonourable mentions. Just three to highlight. First of all, and I think the most recent, is the Inter Tit badge. The new Inter Milan badge looks like it says tit on it. It's hard to look past once you've seen it.
Maybe this is the reason Conte left.
It's very possible. The whole thing with the Lazio plane, just not paying their players and then buying a new jet and taking grief about it from squad members. And finally, the European Super League, just as a whole. I'm not sure who we'd actually give this award to, but just to the league.
The last remaining team in the in the Super League, Juventus, I believe, are the last remaining team.
Yeah,
from Italy.
Well, they're definitely going to be a strong contender then. Boaz, it's your turn, isn't it?
Whoa! I mean, I'm very fond of the Lazio plane story. I have to say, I just thought it was the gift that kept on giving, and the fact that some Roma fan leaked that this plane was not fit for purpose made the story that much better.
Kenny, any
I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I can't veto that. In that case, people power has won, because even if I vote for something else, we'll have a tie, and then I don't know what happens. So.
But again, what would you vote for?
What would I vote? Well,
it's like the away goals rule. It only comes into play if it's level. So you can have a vote.
All right. I'll go for the Inter tip badge. Okay. I just thought it was incredible. Like, how many people must have looked at that internally and not noticed that it said tip? Like, how did it get published? It's a true marvel. Okay.
And now a global brand.
Now a global brand. Yeah, we've got beer of the year down, but we've already kind of done that. So at the start, so I think we'll just go to the last category, which is the best beef. And we've had a lot of beef in the league, and it's so much beef, in fact, that we couldn't narrow it down to three nominations. We've got four, and they are Zlatan versus Lukaku, Conte versus Agnelli, Gasp versus Papu, and Conte versus Lautaro. Kenny, it's your turn to vote first.
Yeah, so I kind of want to give this to Conte versus Lautaro just because of the phenomenal way in which they resolved it with a boxing match introduced by Lukaku at the Inter training ground. But I kind of feel like it's got to go to Conte versus Agnelli, just the history behind it. And I don't even think it was Agnelli. I think it was the entire director's box at Juventus. The middle finger from Conte was just something that was beautifully broadcast around the world. And the idea that Inter were worried about Conte going back to Juve, so inserted a clause after that very public falling out, just adds to the poetry. So for me, that the best beef definitely goes to as we've named it, Conte versus Agnelli, but I think just Conte versus Juventus directors.
Yeah, I honestly think that was the turning point in the season. After Conte flipped them the bird, just really kind of ingrained a siege mentality in that squad, and they went on a massive run and won the title ultimately. Also, excellent that Conte's made it onto this list twice. Boaz, who did you want to vote for?
For me, it's the Agnelli-Conte fight, simply because there was a lot of gesturing and a lot of ill will behind it. I thought the Zlatan-Lukaku one turned a bit nasty, and so probably, while it was comical to begin with, probably shouldn't be laughed upon, and we should, like, as a podcast, we should speak out against this kind of death threats and alleged racism.
Yeah, that is a fair point.
You leave it to me to be the voice of justice. Come on, guys. Yeah.
Can I also add that Se Sempre Tu Maresca will always be imprinted in my memory from this season as well. Conte just is always, Conte's always involved. And if Conte's not involved, one of Conte's players are involved.
Yeah, certainly something that we're likely to miss next season. Although I'm sure there'll be certain other managers that bring a bit of edge and a bit of needle to proceedings.
I wonder who you're talking about.
I'm sure we won't be bored on this podcast, that's all I'm saying. Right, that wraps up the inaugural Scudetto Awards. And winners of the awards, drop us a DM and we will get your trophy shipped out to you.
Gagliardini's sitting there being really, really sad because we renamed his challenge and this was the last thing he had for his whole career.
It's time for our Scudetto, the last one of the season, obviously. So,
okay, what have we got?
Yeah, what have we got? We've got a question here from Viola Club Israel, long-time listener, asks, sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. Is Gattuso right about this? Certainly about my performance on this podcast. Very correct. Anyone else want to answer that one?
I mean, is he talking about life in general? Because
I don't know what he's talking about.
Fiorentina, given these for Viola Club Israel, yes. Yes, I think just in general, in life, in Serie A, in everything, yes. Sometimes maybe shit, sometimes maybe good.
Yeah. Philip Renouf asks, wines next season? I assume he's referring to the civilized beers section. Will we be having civilized wines? I mean, there have been a couple of times where we've been drinking wine.
Don't ruin it.
I don't think the section's going to be replaced.
most of the time we're just drinking water, and we speak about beer brands that have paid us to mention them. So I mean, it's all one big
if
act.
If only. I just like to say that Andrea Pirlo might not be in Italian football next season. So, you know, this whole highbrow approach might.
What? Hang on. Are you telling me that the sponsorship deal with the Vineyard has fallen through? Oh.
It looks unlikely that Civilized Wines is going to happen anytime soon.
Right. Well, sorry about that, Philip. It's a disappointment to all of us. But as you can answer this one, it's from Tifosi Down Under. Just one question. What the hell is going on? As if the season itself wasn't crazy enough, these last few days have been madness.
Yeah, I mean, we were setting up for a fairly chilled episode. Everything was decided apart from the Champions League spots. And yes, Napoli disappointed, but overall, Juventus qualifying for the Champions League is fairly normal. And then, boom, all the managers leave, new managers come in, the keepers are coming and going. This is just crazy Serie A, and all condensed into a few weeks. A few days, I guess because the Euros are coming, so everyone is trying to get their business done before that, but wow, great stuff.
And we've got a couple of questions from Milan Obsession. One of them is, will there be a season two? If so, will there be any changes in the squad? Is anyone's contract up? And are any of you represented by Raiola? That's one question. And the other one is there any truth to the rumours that some of the Scudetto squad have formed a podcast super league? And if so, how do you plan to deal with the fan backlash? So yes, there will be a season two. And yes, we will be joining a podcast super league. We plan to deal with the fan backlash by getting more listener involvement. So we want you to send in audio clips. If you've got questions, we're going to be having more of you on the podcast. Anything to add to that, Kenny or Bars? Any announcements to make? Contracts coming to an end?
Nothing like that, but we've constantly joked on this podcast that we have, like Scudetto in Italy, we have a podcast for Luxembourg and Portugal and Andorra and every single league in the world. So I think next year we'll just build a mega network of all our podcasts.
May I just say that the UEFA Conference League is missing a podcast at the moment, and that there is a prime sponsorship opportunity. So perhaps that will be our equivalent of the Super League.
Watch this space. More exciting announcements to come.
More exciting cities for Boaz to give us statistics on McDonald's from.
For
about 2 weeks.
Looking forward to keeping up the attack.
There are many, many smaller cities that are represented in the Conference League. So I look forward to hearing UEFA Conference stats on McDonald's and in Gdansk in all of these places. So.
And also, now that we have use of the Lazio team plane because COVID's over, we can actually visit all of these cities. Baz, one more question for you. Do you think Milan will receive 30 penalties in the first round of next year's Serie A?
Who's this question from?
It's from Luciano N.
This is a name I recognize from a football forum I frequent. And to be honest, I would urge the gentleman to check back my previous answer, where I said that, in my opinion, most of the penalties that Milan were awarded this season were correct decisions. And if anything, perhaps there was some occasions where Milan were not awarded penalties because the rumor that they were receiving too many penalties started spreading. For example, the game against Napoli, Theo Hernandez was kicked in the area, and also Kessié was fouled in the area against Udinese. Neither of these were given, whereas perhaps without this so-called stigma against the club, they would have been given. And it sounds to me like this particular gentleman has an issue with who these penalties are being given to rather than the quality of the penalties. And with that kind of logic, there is really no point in arguing any further.
May I just renominate my Serie A beef of the season? Award.
Boaz and Luciano. So now it's time for the results that we've all been waiting for. The winner of the Honourable and Dishonourable League. Every week we give short honourable and dishonourable mentions to things that have pleased us or displeased us in Serie A and its surrounding narrative. Boaz has been tallying them up.
You realize that the two of you have the access to exact same data that I have, so you could see what I'm tallying up, potentially. But anyways, this secret information is all available to us now.
So you underestimate our laziness, I think, is the...
Kenny and I are very excited to find out.
So ask me some questions so I can get down to the raw data.
Okay, so first of all, who got the most? Which person or institution got the most honorable mentions throughout the season?
So this surprised me. I thought our friend, my good friend Zlatan Ibrahimovic had walked away with it with 5 honorable mentions nicely spread out throughout the season. But because of Kenny's obsession with Goran Pandev this season,
yes,
Goran has. He got one on episode 13, which is nice for Macedonia qualifying, and then 24, 31, 34, 38, which just put him in there. We should also mention that Lorenzo Insigne has 4 honorable mentions and 1 dishonorable mention, so he's almost there, but he got the wrong mention on one of his matches.
So are you counting the dishonorables as -1?
I'm not. I have 2 different tables.
Okay, fair enough. In that case, obviously, we need to know who's leading the dishonorables.
So if we look at raw data, it's just by name, it's Inter and Lazio with 3 each. And as a person, we have Rocco Commisso, who also has 3. But then if you look slightly underneath the microscope, you notice that Lazio have got this honorable mention for planes, kids, buses, sewer system, press conferences. So I think Lazio really ran away with this one.
That is excellent.
Can I just say I'm delighted that Goran Pandev stuck in.
Well done, Goran.
And a last stat that might be interesting and that perhaps betrays my personal passion for Milan on this pod, but at the end of the day, Milan were the club we mentioned the most. They were mentioned on 31 episodes of Scudetto, closely followed by Juventus on 30, Inter on 28, and Atalanta on 22. So it looks like we picked the top 4. But it kind of makes sense that we'd speak about the clubs who are most in form or playing the biggest games. Of the clubs relegated, Benevento is the club that we spoke about the most.
Yeah. And were there any players that had more than one dishonorable?
Of course. First of all, our friend Cristiano Ronaldo got 3 dishonorables. But he also has some honorables, and that's why he's not in the top table. He got 1 for breaking lockdown, 1 for kind of jumping out of the way in a free kick, and other such shenanigans. And Atalanta fan.
Kind of jumping out of the way in a free kick and kind of costing Juventus their place in the Champions League.
Yeah. And Atalanta fans, curiously, have picked up 2 dishonorables as well. We have a lot of dishonorables to fans, usually because they're congregating, and Atalanta seem to be repeat offenders.
And just the 1 dishonorable for a referee, which... Kenny did give a dishonorable to a referee. I told him it was against the rules, but he did it anyway.
I have to say that my personal favorite dishonorable for this season has to go to Gigi Sarto, because that was a stellar moment of the season, and kudos to him for getting caught.
Yeah, that was the cultivation dishonorable, wasn't it?
Exactly. One of my illegal ones.
Excellent. Right. Well, I think that's probably a good place to end the season. And all that remains is for me to just thank all of our listeners, subscribers, anyone who's written us a message or asked us a question, all of our guest contributors and correspondents. We can't name all of them, but Valdo Martin, Sigmund Vestergaard, Richard Hughes, Hector Finch, anyone else who's been part of our podcast in any way, shape or form this season. It's been a blast. I think we mentioned it briefly before, but we will be back in a couple of weeks to talk about the Euros. And we'll be back for season 2 of Scudetto at the start of next season. Until then, enjoy your summer.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.